The World Health Organization defines health as a state of physical, mental, and social well-being. There is a huge epidemic of mental health out there, and I wanted to explore this issue further from dealing with my own mental health struggles over the last couple of years, and also try and understand how can we use this information to unlock the best version of ourselves. So this week, I interviewed Alex Williams, who is an emotional resilience coach and registered mental health practitioner. From surviving a traumatic childhood led by abuse, which marked the murder of his own mother at the age of 8, he now is helping individuals to overcome those daily obstacles and hurdles and help them to deal with what he didn't have when he was young, to help them understand how they can focus on their own well-being. It's a fantastic episode, and we really deep dive into mental health and how we can apply some basic principles to start focus on our well-being. Now, if you haven't subscribed already, please hit that subscribe button and leave us a review as well. It helps this podcast get shared to more people. But without further ado, enjoy the episode with Alex Williams. Alex, good to see you, mate. Welcome to Unlocked. How are you doing?
Yeah, really good, Ricky. Thanks for having me today.
Good to have you. And obviously, this is probably world first as well, because obviously this is going to be out to the world. But some exciting news has just happened for you.
Yes. Had my first baby. Not me, literally. My girlfriend did. But yeah, first girl came into the world last week. So she'll be 7 days old, 11:48. So I'm now one of these parents who, yeah, people... who is describing how old their baby is by days and hours. So, yeah. But, yeah, it's amazing.
Nice. Yeah. Welcome to the club, my friend. Welcome to the club. Your iPhone or Android phone, whatever, will be full of every photo of the world, every angle now of your child. So
yes.
And a little girl, was it? Sorry? Little girl?
Yes, little Rosie? Girl called Rosie. Yeah.
So, So this could be, who knows, Rosie might listen to this one day in the future. The very first time you did a podcast when she was born.
Yeah, well, you know that I was... I have been thinking about that, thinking, what am I putting out into the world now that my girl is going to see? And I'll say to her one day, you were only 7 days old when I recorded this, so hopefully you've learned something from it, and hopefully it's not terrible advice. But
oh, bless. I'm sure it'll be good, mate. Well, thanks, mate, for coming on. Really interested to talk about this, the epidemic of mental health and how I remember as a kid. It wasn't much about this. It was just like, book your ideas up, son. Get on with it. We don't really talk about feelings in this household. So, but before we dive into that, because I think we're going to go into quite a lot, I'd love to hear, just for the listeners, tell us a little bit about you and tell us a bit about your personal story.
So I'm Alex Williams. My background is as a registered mental health nurse for 19 years now. But I also, on the side, am a speaker, an emotional resilience coach. I mean, essentially, it's all the same thing. It's just I use different tags depending on different environments I'm in. But yeah, my background is 19 years working in the NHS clinically, which working with people with severe and enduring mental illnesses, assessing, treating, signposting, kind of just providing general support and helping people to recover from the things that essentially knock us down in life that can affect our mental health. From a personal perspective, what I add in with my speaking and my coaching aspect more so is that I share my own trauma that I went through. And when I was a kid, I grew up in a domestically abusive household. This was following my mum and dad splitting up, where my dad had an affair, so my mum fell into an abusive relationship, witnessed a lot of domestic abuse, especially around him beating up his own children, and there were kind of threats towards me and my sister, which my mum managed really well. But when I was at the age of 8, I was kind of living in this household, sleeping, kind of in a way you don't realise this is stuff sort of going on, very naive. It was in the middle of the morning, police burst into my bedroom. And I'm going to be honest, Ricky, I feel for my mum because I was a nightmare when I was a kid. But I think probably when I look in hindsight, it's probably because the environment I was in. But I was, I just misbehaving a lot and stuff. So I kind of was like, well, these police, they might be here, you know, because I thought police were just there to arrest bad people. I thought maybe I've done something wrong and they're here to nick me. And so when they were taking me down the stairs in my pajamas and they put me in the police car, took me to this police station, and my sister was with me at the time, that's kind of what I thought was happening. I just had no idea what I was about to walk into. But then these police sat me down and said, your mum's dead, Alex, to me and my sister. And obviously, I didn't know much at the time, but then a couple of days later from watching the news, I found out she'd been killed by my stepdad. So then my world kind of went from being a very, well, what it wasn't normal because of the environment I was in, but what felt like, you know, I had a mum, I had a dad, I had grandparents, I was at school. It felt to me relatively normal, but then to be suddenly the kid who everyone else has got a mum, I haven't. And she hasn't just gone, like, you know, through something not normal, but, you know, like an illness or something. Like, she's been killed by someone, you know, I was living with, and she was in the room next door to me. So my world kind of changed in that sense. And but speaking about, you know, mental health, and like you just said about how we used to get taught to just get on with it, that was kind of how I was raised immediately following that situation. And, you know, on the outside, I grew up in an environment where I had money. I had lots of money. You know, my dad was a successful lawyer. He basically, his way of raising us was like, right, I'm going to give you everything you need financially, you know, materialistically, big house, loads of land, stuff like that. So from the outside, it looked like almost we've fallen into a dream scenario, given what I've been through. But that kind of attitude of, well, you just need to get on with it. You know, we didn't really ever speak about it. We never spoke about what happened. Whenever I was upset about anything, it was kind of like you just had to get on with it, be grateful for what you do have, because I've been given all this stuff, I should be happy. So really, all that kind of emotion and grief I was experiencing, I just stuffed it all down. And in a way, I thought I was being resilient, you know, but really I was just people pleasing. I wasn't sharing what I was really feeling with my dad and in the environment I was with, because I didn't want to upset them. So I wasn't really being resilient. I was just suppressing and repressing what I was going through, but I wasn't mentally unwell. You know, I was just cracking on with life. You know, I was good at football. I messed around at school, but I wasn't in the worst situation. And I kind of lived my life like that, but I didn't really ever know what I wanted to do with my life. You know, I kind of underneath all this kind of seed that I never really, this wound that I never got to look at kind of became this kind of weed within me that I wasn't aware of, where I was kind of, oh, I've got a murdered mum. Yes, I've got this stuff, but I'm damaged. I can't really do anything. And equally, I've got a dad who I just want to impress and please him as best I can. So I kind of, that light within me that kind of had this curiosity to explore and try new things in the world kind of just dampened out. So as I left school, left sixth form, I didn't really get any good grades because I just was messing around and I didn't really know what I want to do in my life. And I fell into mental health nursing, which, you know, it turns out was a good thing. But people ask me, Alex, why did you become a mental health nurse? Why did you get into mental health? And I was like, well, they paid me to do it and I had nothing else to lose, you know, and it wasn't a lot of money, but it was a bursary, so it was good. So I was like, wow, this is great, you know, and I thought, well, if I do fail, then it doesn't matter. You know, I've got nothing to lose. And it turns out I loved it. And I was one of these people on my 3 years training where you have loads of different placements and different clinical settings and environments. And you learn loads of stuff, you know, about biology, the psychology, social aspects, trauma, all this stuff. And it was amazing. And I come out and I was like, oh, this is good. But behind all that, while I was helping everyone else, you know, doing all this stuff, my kind of that unaddressed wound and wounding I had growing up was kind of still there eating away at me. And although my life again felt like it was going good, that kind of wound would come unravel in like romantic relationships and stuff like that, where I've never been with anyone horrible, but like when things went wrong, it was almost like my life fell apart. It was like I just felt awful, and I just felt like I was losing my mum. I was losing my dad. All these kind of relationships I had growing up, it was kind of almost, again, I wasn't aware of this, but that was what was happening. But when I got to the age of 35, I've had my own house, right? I was engaged, you know, it kind of felt like I was finally achieving something, You know, I never had any aspirations in my life because of what happened to me. I believed I just couldn't ever achieve anything meaningful. So to actually feel like I was getting married, haven't had my own house, felt like, oh, you know, you've done something with your life, Alex. You've beat your trauma. But then that all fell apart. And then I went from having a house, I went from, you know, having this amazing, well, felt like an amazing relationship. It wasn't, but, you know, it felt like it was at the time, to absolutely nothing. And that was the final kind of tipping point for me where I suddenly was like, I felt suicidal. I was making plans to end my own life. I was like, I felt like it didn't matter because I felt like no one around me, there was no one around me really. My mum is dead. My dad's relationship with him, it was conditional on me being who he wanted me to be. And, you know, the person I loved at the time didn't want to be me anymore. So I was like, well, I don't feel like I don't matter. I feel like I'm unlovable on top of that because none of these people around me are with me anymore. And also I just felt like I wasn't good enough because I wasn't achieving anything. Everything I felt I had, I just felt like it was nothing. So I was like, well, what's the point? I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to be here anymore. I don't believe, it's hard because it feels like one of these like light bulb moments to me, but around the time, and this coincided with the work I was doing in mental health and leads me to do a lot of what I do now, is that at the time I was seeing so many people who were going through awful things, and you could kind of predict who was going to have a mental health challenge because of what was going on around them. So it wasn't like they were the problem. It's just like all this stuff's happened to them. So of course you're going to feel awful about life. You're going to feel awful about yourself. But I was like wondering, like, well, what if we were taught how to respond to these things growing up? You know, education isn't the best. We know it can improve, but there are good things about education. But one thing we don't really teach is resilience. We don't teach how to get back up when life knocks us down. We literally get told, we go to school, we do our best. If we get a bad grade, we kind of get put in a lower set of academic ability, and we start internalized. No one goes, oh, by the way, you might better go up. They kind of go, well, that's who you are, and this is what you're going to be, and this is all you're going to achieve, kind of, you know, not directly, but that's kind of often the message, yeah. Especially when I was at school, what we got told. So I remember thinking, well, what if we could teach people how to do this? How to approach? What does it really take to, you know, keep it really simple, but how can we overcome these setbacks? So that was already going on in my mind at the time. I was kind of really feeling low. And I didn't want to go down the traditional mental health route because as much as I think it gets a bad rep, mental health services, it isn't like it's often portrayed in media. I equally knew that I wasn't going to get probably what I felt I needed as quickly as I needed it. So I started like, right, what can I do? You know, and I just happened to pick up this book by Viktor Frankl called Man's Search for Meaning. And I wasn't really a big reader growing up. I was too busy kicking a football round, you know, reading for the lame, boring people, you know. It wasn't for me. So the only reading I did was around my studies, and that was it. I never really picked up books. And I just picked up this book, and I just remember reading Viktor Frankl's story of, like, you know, being in a concentration camp during World War II, you know, where like 6 million Jewish people died. And I think it was only 1 out of 26 people actually made it out alive from the situation he found himself in. And I suddenly like looked at my own situation and thought, Alex, like, okay. And this isn't the saying that people should just ignore their pain, but I was like, come on, Alex, like, okay, you have been through some awful stuff. And it was awful. You know, there's people who haven't had it as bad as me, but there's loads who've had it lots worse than me. But I was like, if this guy can get through it, overcome what he's faced, surely you can find a way too. And it was in the quote where he goes, everything can be taken from you, except your ability to choose how you respond, your ability to choose your own way. That it suddenly dawned on me that up until that moment, I had never been choosing my response. I hadn't been choosing my own way. You could argue that, yes, I had. But because no one had taught me how to respond to it, I just thought that the bad things mean that have happened to me and the responses of others are the ultimate final say in what my life's going to become. And when Viktor Frankl suddenly made me realise that actually all of that, it then sits in me. I can now choose the path I go down. And then it was like, oh, okay. And obviously it didn't just heal, recover like that, but then that just set me onto where I am now. And it's just this huge fascination of helping people to overcome things like me, or less, or much worse, so they can build a life that actually makes them want to get up in the morning, as simple as that. So that's led me to here, being here today.
Well, so firstly, thank you, mate, for sharing that. That is an absolutely incredible story. And, you know, I know, like, I see in jest there, you were saying about how Viktor Frankl's gone through so much compared to what obviously probably you've gone through. But still, that's massive, that many people probably wouldn't even ever experience. So the fact that you've obviously got through that and where you are right now, and, you know, you got to like 34 and potentially suicidal thoughts. Well done, mate, you for being here now. And obviously you've got an even wonderful now journey as well with Rosie as well, which is fantastic. So
there's
lots to unpack there. And I'm quite interested in, what do you think, why at that certain point did you discover Viktor Frankl? Do you think it was just like destiny, was just something that was just appeared, or you were searching for something at the time? What do you think that, why did that come into your life at that point?
I think I find with people, and I can't remember who said this, you know, until the pain of change is greater than the pain of staying. No, the pain of staying the same is, wait a minute, the pain of staying the same is greater than the pain of change, you won't change. So
yeah,
I think I've said that right. Basically, what I'm trying to say is that we realize that actually changing is easier than staying the same. And we have to change, and we have to make this change. And I think my life had got to a point where I was either going to kill myself or I had to change. And it was that kind of, when I think about whether it was chance, whether it was like some kind of spiritual divine intervention, I do believe, you know, one thing that's kept me going is my kind of spiritual beliefs around my mum. I think I didn't think she was here watching me right now, I probably wouldn't be where I am now. But I think it was kind of like, okay, Alex, and I had a dog. I still have a dog, and he's called Maverick. And I remember thinking at the time when I was thinking, right, I was thinking of how I'm going to do this, how I'm going to kill myself. And then I'd look at my dog and then be like, what, mate? Oh, who's going to look after him? And it's like, yeah, you know, and I was like, well, and then I was like, well, I can't leave you. You know, I've got a duty here. And even though I didn't want to be here, I was like, well, what if he went to some horribly abusive person like I did, you know, who wouldn't look after me, who wouldn't give the care. And it kind of kept me going. But with the Viktor Frankl book, it was just like, I just remember Googling, you know, looking at stuff, how to get up, how to recover. And it just stumbled across that book. And I thought, well, I'm going to buy this. And so what drove me to do that? I think it was a combination of the pain I was in and wanting to find a way out that wasn't me killing myself. Probably, again, whether you believe this or not, again, this isn't me forcing my beliefs. I think probably my mum in some way guiding me, but also my dog going, yeah, you can't go yet. He's going to feed me. He's going to look after me. So, yeah.
Wow. Bless you. Yeah. So I mean, that is just, you know, I'm guessing as well, that's from Top Gun as well. So.
Yes, Maverick. It is.
Good choice. Yeah, great. So, I mean, it's a profound experience that you've obviously been through, and particularly that's shaped a lot of your life. And particularly, you were talking about how, you know, and I was saying to you just before this call that, you know, you taught to just book up your ideas so and get on with it. Why do you think that was? I mean, know what you know now about mental health and that. Do you think that, or why do you think that it wasn't ever discussed for you? And do you think that that would have changed your life completely if you'd have talked about it, opened up about it, grieved earlier on in your life? Do you think that, I mean, why wasn't it discussed, do you think?
I think it's off, a lot of it's partly down to society. I think back then, having worked with loads of people who have kind of been raised, who are either raised during the war or raised by people immediately who were raised during the war, it's always, like, you know, that being around World War II, that was awful. Like,
keep calm, carry on, sort of thing.
Yeah, we are so fortunate that we are not in a country like that. I think we forget how good we have it sometimes. Doesn't mean bad things aren't happening. But I think, therefore, you know, God, we're so good. We're so grateful that we're alive that actually nothing really compares to that. So when we do have problems, I think these people kind of are like, well, it's not really a problem. So I think that's part of it. But equally, I think it's down to the individual who's raising you. For me, my dad grew up in East London, didn't have a lot for him, but I think he was very much mothered and, you know, given everything he needed so he could go in a sense of like emotionally and so he ploughed all that into just being academic, and he went on to do really good things. And I think he developed this kind of idea that actually, and again, parents of his generation, I find, do a lot of this, like, we didn't have this, so we have to give our kids everything, like materialistically. So his idea was that, well, if I do this, you'll be okay. But what that meant for me was that I didn't get kind of, you know, we did this, and people in that kind of from that generation is, we kind of don't, we all, our emotions, which are important, they're not the most important. If we just let our emotions run everything, then we all get ourselves into problems. But because of that, we're not really taught to express emotions. Things aren't as bad as World War II. And also, we should be happy because we have this. So we're told to just be quiet about things. But I think, like, having gone through what I've gone through now since the healing, I feel like, yes, if I was able to grieve, things would have been different. And I think this is, you know, essentially what most of us are going through, I think, is either grieving for people we've lost, or losing ourselves, or losing the life we wish we could have had, right? When we get to this tends to be what people, I think most mental health problems are probably grief related in some sense. And I think allowing me to express that earlier, allow me to go, actually, you know what, this sucks, I've lost my mum, and actually say, be open and say, like, by the way, I feel like I'm never going to be anyone. I feel like I can't do anything with my life. To have these conversations, I feel like I'm damaged. And then to have someone go, this is awful. Yeah, I can understand why you might feel that way. But someone also to go, that's not true. You know, that could, I don't know. Again, this is me thinking it might have happened. But I think when you can actually sit there in front of people, and I say that with the work I do now, and actually making people aware that actually this doesn't define your life. It's awful what you're going through, but it doesn't define what happens to you, you know. And often you hear people say, don't you, that everything happens for a reason. I don't believe that. I think, you know, if everything happened for a reason, you know, imagine telling that to a little kid in Gaza right now, for example, or a woman in Afghanistan. Everything happens for a reason. You know, what reason are you going to tell them? But what I do believe is that the reason we give to the events that happen to us will determine whether we sink or swim. So for me, the reason I believe I got to the age of 34 wanting to kill myself was because the reason I gave to the events that happening was that I was damaged, unlovable, not good enough. Whereas if since then I've realised that actually the reason I gave to them now is more that, well, they were awful, but I can use those experiences to help others and to also show to others that actually I am not those experiences. They're just things that have happened to me.
Yeah, the past is the past, isn't it? And it's someone was talking to me about this recently about, you know, it doesn't define you. It's just a stepping stone, isn't it, that's got you to where you have. And it doesn't mean that it's the be all and end all. And you know, you'll know this right now, right? Because of Rosie and my daughter, Alma. You know, when Alma was born and Rosie was born, she didn't come out of her mum like with the belief of fear of spiders or the fear of heights or fear of loud noises, whatever. You know, I think babies generally, they only have two fears, don't they, when they come out, which is the fear of loud noises and the fear of falling over, right, standing up. But it means that everything's learned, which means that everything is unlearned. You know, we can unlearn everything.
Yeah.
It's sad, though, that unfortunately, I mean, you know, you had like an awakening, a moment where you go like, this, you know, fuck this shit. I'm going to do something about this. I'm going to respond in a different way. Hey, just pausing this podcast very, very quickly to thank the patrons of this podcast, Anthony Howe, Sherry Brenton, Steve McDermott, and Chloe Wilmot, for your continued support for helping this podcast be the podcast that it is. If you are interested in supporting this podcast for as little as £1, it'll help get this podcast produced for better quality, better videos, and better software to get this podcast to speaking to more people around the world. If you're interested, there is a link in the show notes, but thank you to the amazing patrons for supporting this podcast. Now, back to the episode. But there's a massive epidemic out there that people just cannot see that they can respond and they can take responsibility. And I know that we talk about this on stage a lot, and it's very easy, isn't it, sometimes to say that, you know, we can see this, you know, because we're doing it ourselves. And sometimes there's just this massive epidemic that people can't see that, you know, they're so wired that the past is the past and that is final. You know, I went to school and These are the beliefs that I have around the world. So that's what it is. And it's not changing it. And I just find that really hard. And in your experience, obviously 19 years as a clinical experience, why do we see this where, you know, people find it really hard to not take responsibility and it's so wired onto their beliefs? Why do we see that?
Well, I think first of all, it's important to recognize that what happens to us does affect us. So it's like, we've got to be really careful that we don't say that, oh, well, if we all take responsibility, we'll all be okay. Actually, in my job, we know people in poverty, you know, who've gone through significant amounts of trauma, financial deprivation, socially isolated, all that sort of stuff. You know, that you're more prone to struggling mentally, emotionally and physically. You know, that's true. So, but I think when it comes to taking responsibility, it's hard, I think, would probably be the first thing. But equally, I think that when we tell people to take responsibility, that's a pretty loaded thing to say. Because I'm sure you're aware of this, like, I'm still figuring out how to deliver that message without sounding like a bit of a dick. Because you're like,
take responsibility. Like Gary Vee or something, isn't it? Take responsibility for shit. Yeah, totally.
And I've said things like, no one's coming to save you. And now I look back and I think, oh, that's a really crap thing to say, because it's not true and it's not the world we should live in. The world we should live in is that actually we're all helping each other. If we had a community, is one of it's an absolute essential pillar of recovery, resilience, of good, having a good life. But really, I think it's because when it comes to taking responsibility, it does sound, it's a loaded thing to say, but also when we're growing up, you know, when did anyone ever say taking responsibility was a good thing? It was always like, Alex, take responsibility for doing this to your sister. Take responsibility for not tidying your room, for not doing your homework. Yeah. It was always covered with negativity. And no one ever said to us, like, responsibility is actually, and this is how I say it, it's about you getting to decide the direction you take. And even to make it as small as possible. And I always say this, actually, so when it comes to taking responsibility, that even that feels like too big of a question, that you get to decide where you go. Because that, to me, in my mind, and for most people, should be empowering. It's like, oh, wicked. Just because I've been with this abusive partner, that doesn't mean I have to settle for abusive people. You know, I can actually go and get support to help me with whatever I need, and then find someone who actually treats me well. But it's breaking it down, really, that responsibility thing is really about just what can I do right now to start making things a little bit better. And it's about taking action. And it's not about massive action like Tony Robbins says. It's literally like tiny, 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 tiny bits of action repetitively over the course of time in a direction you want to go. And that's really about what responsibility is. Getting to choose the direction you want to go and then doing those tiny little bits of action to make it, to create that life or sustain the good things in your life that are keeping you well.
Yeah, definitely. I was going to ask about this. Do you think as well, because this whole thing, and you're absolutely right, it's like, oh, you know, I don't want to come across as a dick. Because we've seen it, you know, I've pulled out of a massive low point in my life where it's like, God, you know, do I want to continue to feel like this? No. So I'm going to do something about it. And then that's when you start to see the things. And it's very easy, isn't it, for people to stay in that current situation because it's comfortable and it's the norm. And quite often, unfortunately, if it's a very, you know, severe or traumatic experience, there is no light. There is no other way of seeing it. But do you think there's a massive impact? And I've definitely felt this as well on myself. But, you know, Gen Z, the work you're doing with Gen Z, but also just the way the world is and people's model of success massively impacting our mental health.
100%. And it's, I feel like I know I'm not alone, because I know there's people out there that sometimes you feel like you're the only person saying this, but then you suddenly find someone else on the internet is doing the same thing. But I feel like in society now, we've got two extremes. We've now got everyone is told that every bad thing that happens to them is trauma, which isn't true, first of all. But then on the other end of this spectrum, we've been told that to heal, recover from our things, is to become the best version of you and become a super successful solopreneur with a fancy car, with on the beaches. So we've kind of got like every little thing's the worst thing in the world, and your life should be absolutely amazing. And it's all over social media. So now Every, not just young people, everyone is looking at their lives, how it is now, and thinking that, oh, it's not like this, or that every little thing they're going through is the worst thing in the world. And so therefore, I need to get therapy and I need to be healed from it. So literally we're like, well, if my life isn't here and everything else below it is awful, then now we're all thinking, oh, we've got mental health problems. So, but equally, you know, society has removed us from the very thing, and is moved us from the very things that keep us well. So when it comes to like identifying success and things like that, we've been drawn in a direction that's actually making us unwell, in my opinion. And actually, this is why, I find myself talking more and more about this when it comes to responsibility. It's like taking responsibility for creating good health, good times, and having good people in your life. Like if you literally focused your life on those three things, you would be happier than most people in the world. Forget like the having the business that's like you can show off and everyone LinkedIn, look, this is, I went from zero to like 100,000K months by, you know, whatever I was doing, which probably isn't happening for most people who say they're doing it. You know, you would be happier than these people. But we've kind of got to this moment in society where people are like looking at life and think, well, I'm not super famous, I'm not rich, and therefore thinking like their life's not good enough.
It's you know what, you've just reminded me of something. I had a really good story with so we're both NLP practitioners, and I had a chat with my NLP practitioner trainer, and she said, Ricky, like, have you you know, what's your values? And I went, oh, I was like, well, doing what we do, speaking on stage, presenting, doing magic, I'm always serving other people. And I neglected myself. I've not really served myself in a long time. And she said, so let's do it. You know, let's write down your values. And I was like, okay, cool. So I was like, fun, number one. Yeah, family, of course, yeah. Fun, you know, one or two, right? Fulfillment, freedom, autonomy, creativity, da-da-da-da. And I was going through the list, da-da-da-da. And it got to about, like, I was going, money, yeah, money. Money's important, you know, because you got to pay the bills. And I was like, 19. Mental health, yeah, mental health. And I was like, 20. Physical health, you know. And she went, right, let's just stop there. I was like, oh, yeah. And you know, Ricky, that if you don't prioritize your mental health or your physical health, then you cannot do any of those other values. And I was like, oh, shit, yeah. I was like, God, my illusion of life and what we see, and like you said there, and that's that model of success and that chasing after the big dream, chasing after the 100K months, the million downloads on a podcast, when actually the number one value should be my physical and mental health. You know, I found this from the research that the World Health Organization defines health as a state of complete physical and mental and social well-being. If I'm not looking after that, then what is my life like?
Okay. Yeah.
I can't function, right? Cannot function. Right. But I'd be genuinely interested to, you know, the work that you're doing. I'd love to hear, because I think I'm in the millennial phase, me. Yeah, I'm in the millennial phase. So, but I'd love to hear, you know, what the common struggles that you observe, and how do you approach helping them build resilience in today's fast-paced and uncertain world for Gen Z?
So, yeah, the main problems that kind of are the ones that take away those basic things, really. If, you know, I know, again, obviously, you know, that and will be like finances, housing, you know, lack of stability, really, in life generally tends to... I work in quite a socially deprived area, it tends to be those things that many of us take for granted. Many the people who go, oh, you just need to think positive, you just, you know, everything happens for a reason, forgiveness and all that. those people who say that don't tend to be living or coming from these environments, right? Because they're, you know, these are the things that affect us. Because when we don't have like a solid foundation over our head, solid foundations beneath us, with its money, accommodation, good people around us, and we've grown up environments which are toxic and abusive, in, you know, we don't like ourselves, and we don't have the kind of the soil that allows us to grow and be the people we need to be. So most of the time, the problems I see are generally that around those things. It's I know we like to say mindset is everything, and mindset is like the thing that kind of makes us to move on. But these people don't have generally have issues with their mindset. They have an issue with what's happening around them. And you can't CBT your way out of, like, you know, whatever modalities there are out of, like, poor, you know, situations. So when it comes to supporting them, a lot of it is just, you know, we often think about what we should say to people and stuff like that, and these weird, and being an NLP, like a practitioner, we get taught these weird tools to use with people. To be honest, you just need to sit there and validate and listen to people first of all, and just say, by the way, your situation is shit. If I was feeling being your situation, yes, I would be experiencing that. So it's normalizing how they're feeling. It's again opening up.
Yeah.
You know, and you're feeling crap about your life, and you're feeling crap about yourself, because everyone else in society seems to be figured out, and you're in this situation where you're like, what is going on with my life? So it's about validating it, allowing them to know that. I know it's a cliche saying, but that it's okay to not be okay. Because if life's crap, we're not going to go, but sit there and go, yes, it's amazing, try and think positively because we're worried about negative thoughts. We need to actually allow ourselves to experience that, so we can let go of some of those emotions and process them. And then it's a lot about like those basics about looking after our mental and physical health. So it is about, you know, making sure we're sleeping, we're eating, we're around good people, we're spending our time doing things we enjoy, you know, things we just seem to have like forgot, because now we're jumping in ice baths and doing crazy breathwork techniques, which yes, can help, don't get me wrong, but then again, it's like we're so far removed from what actually helps that it's like it's ridiculous. So it's about building on that, and it's about doing it one step at a time, real small steps, and kind of really starting to get support around them so they can build their lives up, so they can look after themselves. And again, yeah, take it one step at a time, being really patient, because I tell you what, there is not, and I hope to be wrong one day, but there's not one person, there's not a modality or intervention out there that will fix your life overnight. And I think this is often, again, when we're talking about how mental health and healing is portrayed on social media, it's like, oh, this is the secret to curing anxiety, or this is the secret to curing depression. You think you'll go along to this like motivational weekend and you'll come out and go, oh my God, I'm free and I'm free from all this pain. And then like a week later, you're back to normality. And like, oh, I've just spent like $1,000 on this. What a waste of money. But like, we really need to understand.
Well, most people like Tony Robbins.
Yeah.
Sorry, Alex. I was just going to say most people at Tony Robbins, they go back again, 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 again.
Yeah, and it's an addiction, because you're addicted to the emotional highs that you're experiencing. Not that I'm advocating taking drugs, but you could probably go buy a gram of coke from a dealer and probably get exactly the same high you get, and you'd save yourself a lot more money. But you know, and these events tend to create the feeling of transformation rather than actual transformation. So like, you feel like, oh my God, I feel amazing, I've done this meditation with like thousands of other people, and yeah, I feel great, and then boom, then you have to sink, you drop, and wow, my life's back to normal. But what I always say is, why you take one step at a time, be really patient with yourself, whilst recognizing that you're not going to have the energy every day to smash everything on your to-do list. Because, you know, if we have a bad night's sleep, or your kid gets sick, which I'm sure I'm going to encounter at time to time, you get sick, your energy goes down. You have to just look after yourself. Again, look after your basic needs. When people do commit to take practices, to commit to doing the basics and keep, you know, plodding along, like chipping away at their problems and creating this, and trying to create and form this life they want to. No, in the moment, it probably will feel like you're not getting where you want to be. But we have a tendency as humans, when we look back over time, go, God, remember when I used to be like that? And they're like, oh my God, I'm so much better positioned now. And that's what tends to happen. But it takes time. So really, that's what I would do with people. It's again to you know, validate their pain, get them focused, looking after the basics, and identifying the direction they want to go, and then kind of being that kind of support around them, so they can kind of keep that themselves going in the right direction. And that's really simple stuff.
I love that.
Like, you don't need to be like a trained mental health specialist to do that for anyone. Like, this is the thing. I think, again, with mental health and psychotherapy and everything, we've got these crazy weird ideas and we overthink it, and I've definitely been guilty of overanalyzing every single bit about my psyche, hoping that I can find some little flaw that I can correct and then make my life better. No, just if you get the basics right, you will generally be well. It doesn't mean you'll be free from pain, because that's why, and one of the big messages I give is that pain's coming, it doesn't matter, but if you can build a good life around that provides like a support, like a kind of a buffer to the pain that allows you to get back up, so you've still got stuff to look forward to. But keep it basic, honestly. You don't need to be thinking, what am I gonna need to do this weird and wonderful technique. Of course, if you want to, go do it. Everyone's up to do what it's up to anyone to pursue whatever they want to pursue. If you're interested in it, go do it. This isn't me knocking modalities. It's me saying that actually you probably don't need to do half this stuff. You can actually, if you get the basics right, you'll probably be doing all right.
I love that. Yeah. And so just to clarify, I love that whole validating the pain, being patient along the journey. So just to elaborate on those basics for anyone out there. So sleep, great nutrition, exercise. What other things would you say would be part of that list of just the basics?
Good people. You know, make sure you're spending time with good people. Do you think, you know, having fun? I'd also say learning new skills, not purely for monetization. This is, again, the thing, just go back to think to that little kid you were when you were just like curious about things and just pursue things you're interested. That keeps us going. One thing that doesn't get mentioned is money. I mean, making sure we've got enough. You know, I hate it when people say money doesn't buy you happiness. Because I tell you what, try telling that to someone who's like got no money. You know, having money, We need money to reduce the stress. If we don't have to worry about our bills as much, or we've got enough to get by, we tend to be okay. But it's really, yeah, those basics, looking after the sleep, exercise, diet, good people, have some fun, learn something new if you want to, and just hopefully get enough money to help you get by. And if you do that, And try not to beat yourself up too much, don't internalize the problems you encounter. Don't make them about you. Everyone goes through crap. The worst thing you can do is start believing the things happen to you because of who you are. Bad things just happen because they happen. When you don't internalize them and don't make them about ourselves, when we detach from them and see them for what they are, we can then grow and learn from them. So then we can move forward with our lives rather than be held back by them. But yeah, keep it simple. Yeah, I love that. Honestly.
Absolutely. That's the key, isn't it? It's that whole thing. Mm. I know this is overused massively in NLP about the whole, you wouldn't let me come around your house and start painting all your walls red. But we do that with our own house and our own mind. We let people come in and like internalize it when things happen. You know, I've had loads of things. Like in the last week or so, my garage door came off the rail. I've had the pressure release valve of my boiler spew water. So we had a leak. We've had a leak in the ceiling through the living room. You know, now that is all like minor context, because I know that there's people out there in the world right now that are in far worse, you know, difficult places than I am, you know. So when you put it into context, that's huge. But again, we just internalize it, don't we? Going, oh my God, you know, I'm a failure. Oh, this, you know, my life's crap, you know, what's going on? But actually, no, it's not. We need to stop doing that and stop letting these thoughts, you know, be the wallpaper in our houses, because it's not true, not true at all. Alex, sorry, go on.
No, I was going to say, when you're talking about it, we're all able to do that when we put someone else in our shoes. If we were watching someone else go through that, you wouldn't go, oh God, you're rubbish. What an awful person are you? You know, oh God, you should just get over it. You know, you'd be like, you would be like, oh yeah, you know, you're a good person. You know, bad things do. Okay, again, this is just me glossing over the feedback you give. You wouldn't just give positive toxic feedback advice, but you just, you know, you'd realize that actually mistakes happen, right? You're not your mistakes. We're humans. We're prone to making mistakes. We all are. This is who we are. But we also prone to growing from them and learning from them. And it's, again, if it was someone else going through that, you wouldn't give them a hard time for it. So
exactly. Well, Alex, as we kind of come near the end, I know that you have a lovely framework called the 3 R's. I'd love you, if you wouldn't mind, to elaborate on the significance of each of the 3 R's, and then obviously how that can help us build our mental resilience and well-being.
Yeah, so obviously as a speaker and yourself, Ricky, we kind of have to create these little 3s or 5s or these little things, don't we? But it was really, the 3 R's are really about how to keep approaching the setbacks we face, keep it nice and simple. So the first one I call release your pain, and that's essentially about knowing that it's okay to not be okay. To allow yourself to experience those emotions, to protect yourself from those emotions. So if you're someone who's prone to maybe making your life worse through your emotional reactions, keeping things really simple, like by having good people around you, exercising, journaling, stuff like that. And then what we just touched on with Release Your Pain is about not making it about you. You know, bad things happening to you does not equal something wrong with you, is what I always tell people. So it's about not internalizing it. So the first thing is release your pain is how you initially respond to the event. The second one is responsibility. And again, it's about recognizing that you get to decide how you respond to this situation. And as simple as that, what do you want your life to look like? What direction do you want to go? What sort of person are you going to be? And again, using that responsibility to focus on the basics, to focus on your physical health, to focus on, you know, having fun, spending time with good people, all those sort of things that keep you well. And then the third one is called real self-belief. And it's about how we, you know, it's so important that we believe we can get to the destination we want to get there, but how do we maintain that? And that's really about practice being persevering, practicing consistently and being patient with ourselves. And we do that really by focusing what we can control, taking one step at a time, however small that is. And, you know, realizing that our energy levels to do these things, like I spoke about earlier, is going to fluctuate. You know, you're not going to wake up every day going, yes, I'm going to smash my goals. You're going to have days where you can't be bothered. But yeah, and if you take 2 weeks off from doing anything, as long as you remember go back to responsibility, remember, I still get to decide the direction I take. I don't have to give up here. This isn't the end. Then that's the really healthy way to approach it. So if you apply those three things consistently every day to every setback or just life in general, you'll have a far better outlook. Your life will just look much better. It doesn't protect you from problems, but it does now enable you to be resilient towards your problems. Yeah, and that's the three R's to getting back up, yeah. I call them.
Lovely framework that. Yeah, and I love these repeating things we're talking about looking after ourselves and self-care and that whole model of being patient as well, because I don't think it's often talked about enough. But last question, Alex, I'd love to share with you, because obviously you mentioned quite a lot, obviously, in your talks and what you do about how it's unrealistic to be happy living a life that you hate. Yeah. So how can listeners or individuals start building a life that aligns with their values and bring them fulfillment?
It comes back to the thing I mentioned earlier, and good health, good people, good times. Literally.
Love it.
Listen, you know, we can sit there and do all these things and it's good to think about our values, but you probably know or have some curiosity about what you find interesting, and what you want to do with your life. And again, I'm not saying you have to go quit your job and become a super solopreneur or whatever. For me, and I'll give my own experience here, part of my healing journey, I thought I had to become like this next Tony Robbins kind of guy. When I started speaking, I thought, that's me, I'm going to be on the stage. And I realised it wasn't me. What I value is I value looking after my body. I value exercising regularly. I value sitting at the pub now and then with my mates, having a beer and just taking a piss out of each other. I value just being around good people. And as long as I've got the bills paid, I realised I don't need anything else. Now, again, that's probably going to go against everything like all these super successful people say. So you're wasting your potential. Why? I'm not wasting my potential. I'm happy. And I actually found that people who are like that are happier than the ones who are constantly chasing success. And I think if you can, if you want to create a good life, just listen to whatever makes you happy. And if it isn't what society tells you should, sod that. This is your life. It's no one else's life. If you just if you like feeding the squirrels down the park, or you like supporting your football team with your mates, or, you know, you play Warhammer, or you sit there for hours on end playing Call of Duty and you're happy, then who's anyone else to tell you that you're not? It's not for me to tell you your life's rubbish. You're wasting your time. If you're happy and you feel content in this moment, because there is only this moment, yes, that might change in 10 years, but sod it. If you're content, you're happy, then that's good. And listen to that. Stop comparing your life to what other people tell you should live. Listen to yourself. And if it makes you happy, whatever that is, if it makes you content, then that's all that matters. And that's what I think we should be telling people, rather than, oh, by the way, you're wasting your potential because you're not reading every self-help book every day to try and better yourself or this, this and that. Because that makes people ill. And I tell you, there's a lot of successful people who are probably far unhappier than they come across on social media. And it's important to realise that.
Yeah, definitely, mate. 100%. Well, Alex, absolute pleasure, mate, to have you on the show. So thank you for coming on Unlocked. And best wishes for Rosie, and yeah, everything in the future, mate. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah. Thank you. You're welcome.